When we started out a few weeks ago, I'd asked the question about, you know, what's the most important thing in your life? You know, we kicked around a few things, and I suggested that there's certainly an argument that can be made that the most important thing in our lives is our relationships, right? Because, I mean, kind of so much of our life revolves around relationships, right? So this, through the series that we've been in called Connection Points, right, that's what we were looking at. You know, and over the weeks, we've talked about lots of different kinds of relationships. We've talked about our relationships with one another, kind of our personal relationships. We talked about kind of one of the most difficult relationships in our lives sometimes is our relationship with ourselves and that kind of internal dialogue and that internal battle that we face so often. Last couple weeks, we talked about broader relationships. What is our responsibility to people around us who are in need? You know, should we have a relationship with them? And of course, the answer is yes, we should, and we should do what we can to help and support them. And then last week, we kind of delved into this idea of this recognition that we're all kind of in different places in our faith journey. You know, some of us are kind of, you know, really kind of invested and bought in. Others of us are really kind of uncertain. Some of us think it's just silliness that, you know, old people worry about. You know, some of us kind of are like, you know, I think there's something bigger out there. I'm just not sure what it is. You know, and some folks have even kind of gotten to that point where, you know, you might believe in Jesus that, yeah, he's probably real, but what does it really mean in my life? Right? And the point of all this is that it's an understanding that we are all in such different places that allows us to be a richer connection with one another, a deeper connection with God, and that allows us to kind of do the sort of things that I think make life rich and valuable. So this week, as I'm kind of wrapping up the series, what I'd like to look at a bit more closely, you know, is that issue of this idea that we're all on a journey together. We just happen to be in different places in that journey. And it is my firm belief that the intent of Jesus' church was to recognize that the church was never meant to be a place where, you know, we get inside and we go, okay, the seats are full enough and we don't need anybody else here. You know, the idea was always that we should be evolving and growing and connecting with people in different places and welcoming people who see the world differently than we do, because maybe our viewpoint's not always 100% right. Now, mine, of course, always is. But I've heard other people have challenges with that, right? Now, you guys who hear me talk week after week, like, no, his viewpoint is not always right. But you know what? You know, joking about it. But you know, we kind of find ourselves living in a time where we don't want to hear from the other side, whatever the other side is. You know, politics, life, religion. You know, I don't know. What's the right color for a car? Right? We can fight about anything at this point. And I think the idea is that different is good. God created us differently. And I think that for those who have had a longer-term relationship with God, I think it's important to remember that we can learn a lot from people who are in an earlier part of the relationship. You know, I just think of, you know, as many of you know, that I kind of grew up with religion, kind of bailed on it in my 20s. And I was in my 40s before kind of things turned around for me. And I remember when I came back to faith, this idea that God loves me was just kind of this kind of overwhelmingly joyful thing. Like the recognition of that just kind of changed things for me. And I remember talking with people who had been in life or in church their whole lives, you know, in their 60s and 70s, who had still not come to grips with that. That God really loves them and accepts them as they are. And I'm not saying this is about me in any way, but seeing someone who's kind of newer to their faith embracing that joy can bring joy to people who are struggling with those things. And so as we kind of go through my message this morning, what I would really encourage us with is to kind of hear this with ears to say that what's this like to someone else? How does it feel to someone who's different than I am? And, you know, what can I provide to support someone else, but also what can I receive to grow and to learn. So what we've been doing in this series, and what we'll wrap up today, is that we've been walking through the Old Testament book of Ruth. And what I want to look at in this is one of the things I find so amazing about the book of Ruth. It's this little tiny book, four chapters, but it just shows us all these dimensions of relationships. And we've talked about a bunch of them over the in recent weeks. And the thing that I find interesting is that although the narrative takes place 3,000 years ago, it's actually over 3,000 years ago, more than 1,000 years before Jesus, it actually paints this incredible picture of our relationship with Jesus. Now, just a quick reminder, right, that if you've been here the past few weeks, I'll catch you up. If this is your first time, I'll kind of bring you to where you need to be. In the book of Ruth, as I mentioned, it's about 3,000 years ago. Our two main players in it are Ruth and her mother-in-law, Naomi. And interestingly, it takes place in a town you would know the name of, Bethlehem, the town associated with Jesus' birth. But again, a full millennia before his birth. And what we find is that Ruth and Naomi are in this very difficult spot, that both of their husbands have died. And we don't really know how, but we know that in the ancient world, it was a deeply patriarchal society, that it was very difficult for a woman who didn't have a man in her life to survive. It was just the structure that they lived in. So as a result, Naomi and Ruth were literally facing poverty. And what made it even more challenging for Ruth, where Naomi, this was in her hometown where they're living, Ruth was from another country far away, so everything is foreign to her in this process. And so as they struggle to survive, Ruth decides to do what's called gleaning. And what gleaning is, literally, is that you go out to farms where the harvest has already been harvested, and you walk through hoping to find things that the harvesters didn't pick up. So you're just trying to collect whatever food is left behind. And we know that there's something going on in Naomi's life that Naomi's not able to help. You know, it may be simply just her age. There may have been a health issue. But what we do know is that Ruth had to do all the gleaning for the two of them. So she would head out each day, going through, pick through fields, hoping to get enough food to survive the night till tomorrow, until she could do it again. But one of the things we discover is that as she heads out, she actually goes to the fields of a man named Boaz. And Boaz turns out to be a man of kind of high standing. He's well off, and he's actually very kind. So he becomes aware of Ruth's situation. And so he actually kind of makes things kind of really, really easy for her. He tells his employees to make sure food gets dropped so she can pick it up more easily. And he's trying to take care of her in the process. And as we were finishing up last week, we kind of described that after a full day's work, Ruth had gone home with food. And she went home with what's called an ephah full of grain. How big is an ephah? How often do you work in ephahs, out of curiosity? It's funny, the kind of sources vary. She went home with somewhere between 1 and 2 5-gallon buckets full of grain. So plenty. I mean, enough for them to eat as well as sell if they needed money. So he really sent her home kind of really loaded up. So she walks through the door with all this food. Naomi's like, oh, where you been? And basically says, oh, I met this nice guy named Boaz. He really helped me out. He really took care of me. And as you remember, as we were finishing up last week, Naomi's very excited about the fact that it's Boaz. And so she encourages Ruth to stay with him, that keep working his fields. He's safe, he'll protect you, he'll take care of you. And so she does. And so as we continue this week, what we find is that Ruth has actually been gathering in his fields for the entire harvest season. So this is probably like 3 months that she's been there. And we find that as she's there more, her and Boaz talk more, and her and Boaz start getting along. And it seems there's kind of a romance kind of developing. But remember, this is the ancient world, right? You know, in the ancient world, you didn't just go out on dates, right? Marriage just kind of had to be arranged. There was a process and a way you're supposed to do it. So it's kind of these weird situations that, you know, they're becoming attracted to one another, but they only see each other at work sort of thing. And so one day, Naomi decides to offer Ruth some guidance, that I want to encourage you to kind of go to the next level. So what happens, it says, one day, Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi, said to her, "My daughter, I must find a home for you where you will be well provided for." Now, what's interesting is that Naomi is doing something that's incredibly selfless here. And but it's not immediately obvious. Remember, how is Naomi getting food? By Ruth going out and gleaning. And so Naomi could have just kind of sat back, you know, and let Ruth keep doing all the work. But Ruth's a much younger person. And so Naomi's saying that, "I want more of a life for you than this, than just getting through day to day." So she says that, "I want you to go out and talk to Boaz." And remember that the thing I left you with last week was that Boaz was this thing called a guardian redeemer. And we'll talk about what that means in a second. But what we need to know at this point is a guardian redeemer means that there's some kind of connection that they can kind of work through to kind of get married to one another. So basically, Naomi actually asked Ruth to do something that's kind of strange to us. That she says that, "Okay, I want you to go talk to Boaz. I want you to let him know that you're open to him marrying you. But I want you to sneak out there at night." And so what she actually says is that, okay, the harvest is finishing up. So Boaz and his workers are going to be working late into the night. They're going to be drinking. They're going to be kind of partying because it's been a really good season. What I want you to do is head out there. And when all the folks who work for Boaz fall asleep, go talk to him kind of privately. And what's happening here, it seems strange to us. And, you know, I had to kind of really dig into this to kind of understand what was happening. It's really a case of they don't want gossip to get started. That they don't want to risk damaging either one of the reputations. So Naomi is like, just go quietly talk to him. Let him know how you feel. And let's see where it goes from there. So, you know, for Ruth, this is kind of a date. Right? So she does what you do when you go on a date. She gets cleaned up. She puts on her best clothes. She heads down there. She waits for everyone to kind of finish working, fall asleep, and she heads over to talk to Boaz. But again, this is 3,000 years ago. How many electric lights do they have? Ain't no electric lights. So for Boaz, suddenly he's in the dark and kind of bumps into somebody. He's like, "Who are you?" Which is what you always want to hear when you're going out on a date. "Who are you?" And she says, "I am your servant, Ruth. Spread the corner of your garment over me so that you are a guardian redeemer of our family." Now, that's a sentence we kind of need to take apart. Now, I mentioned this last week, but when she refers to herself as being a servant, she's not literally meaning that she's a servant. She's simply paying respect to him, that I'm your servant, Ruth. Spread the corner of your garment over me is basically saying that that's her saying, would you marry me? Would you be willing to marry me? Would you give me the protection of your household? But this guardian redeemer thing comes up again. And what's interesting to note is that guardian redeemer in their culture is actually a legal term. It actually relates to a part of the law. They lived under what we call the Mosaic Law, the law as recorded by Moses. And the guardian redeemer is this law that was put in place to protect family members if they fell on ill fortune. And so what it allowed a family member to do is kind of bail another family member out of trouble. And there were kind of two key parts of it. One part was if a family member ran into financial trouble and they had to put their land up against a debt, the guardian redeemer was able to buy that land out of debt. The other thing it did, and this will seem very strange to us, is that in the event that a man dies, leaving his wife a widow, the guardian redeemer could actually marry that widow. And the idea is that you're trying to protect family lines, right? That you're trying to keep property in the family that it belongs to, and you're trying to make sure that a woman who's committed her life to her husband, which meant committing it to her family, to his family, would be cared for. The thing about the marrying the widow part, though, that's kind of odd, you could marry the widow even if you were already married to somebody else. You just kind of had two wives now. No problems there, all right? But nonetheless, that's kind of how it worked. That is how it worked. And so what she's saying to Boaz is, will you pay the price to redeem me, to pull my husband's property out of debt and bring me into your family? That I care for you, I care about your family, and I want to be part of it. So the thing is that for Ruth and Boaz, this is kind of interesting, right? That she kind of makes this appeal to him and not being 100% certain what he's going to do. But the good news is she didn't read the situation wrong, right? He actually cares for her as well. So what he does is he says, I want to do this. I want to marry you. But remember, this is a legal process. He's not first in line. The way it works is the guardian redeemer is that the closest relative has what we call first right of refusal, which is what every woman wants to hear in their lives, of course, right? But he basically, the nearest relative has first dibs on the property and the wife sort of thing. So Boaz says that under the law, I can't marry you directly. The other guy has to have a chance first. Again, what every woman wants to hear. But he says, don't worry about that. I'll deal with this. I assure you by tomorrow, I will have all this worked out. So the next day, Boaz does what he said he would do. He actually heads out into the town, what would be the equivalent of the town square, and he just kind of sits and waits for the guy who is kind of first in line to walk by. And as that guy walks by, Boaz is like, hey, I want to talk to you. Now, one of the things that Boaz has an advantage in is that Boaz knows the whole story. He knows about Naomi. He knows about her daughter-in-law, Ruth. The other guy doesn't appear to have been privy to all this. So basically, Boaz says to the other guy, hey, you know the widow Naomi? You know that her and her husband had kind of moved away and the husband died and she came back? Well, you know, her property is kind of being held in debt. Would you be willing to, you're the first guardian redeemer, are you willing to kind of buy that property out? And the guy's like, well, this is a pretty good deal for me, because he's probably getting the property for less than it's actually worth. So the expectation would be, based on what he knows, is that he can get the property at a discount price, and his only real responsibilities are to give Naomi a place to live to the end of her life. We think Naomi's pretty old, so he's okay with that. The thing is that he's happy to undertake what's going on as long as it's to his advantage. So what Boaz does is he gets him all kind of worked up, going, hey, this is a great deal. Don't you love it? The guy's like, yeah, I want to do it. But then Boaz says, oh, well, wait a second. There's one more thing. There's also Naomi's daughter-in-law, Ruth. So you have to marry her as well. Now, that doesn't sound terrible, but there's also another part to the guardian redeemer thing that I didn't tell you about. Not only do you have to marry the widow, but you're kind of obligated to give her children, but the children aren't yours. They're the dead husband's, because you're trying to carry on the family line. So the children might even have his kind of last name sort of thing. But even beyond that, you buy this property with your money. But when those children become of age, you have to give the property to them. So for this guy, first he saw this deal of, you know what, I get this land on the cheap and I just put this old lady up for a while and I'm good. And now it's like, wait a minute. What you're saying is that I have to marry her. Odds are he already has children of his own that he's planning to give all this stuff to. And he learns that that's not the deal. And so when the deal was to his advantage, he was in. But once it's not to his advantage, he's out. So he says to Boaz, you know what? You do it. I'm not interested. And so Boaz does that. And the thing that I find is that what's amazing is this, is that Boaz does this knowing he receives no material benefit, that he gets nothing from it. He loves Ruth, and he wants to bring her into his family. He was happy to pay the cost, whatever it was, to bring her into his family. And I think to us, that may seem strange at the surface, you know, and I kind of make a big blustery deal about it sort of thing. But the reality is that we all face those situations in our lives, right? We all have things in our lives that we believe give us promises that they are going to take care of us, that ultimately just take from us. You know, we have those situations where, you know, we get stressed out at work, and, you know, and I'll just have a few drinks after work, and I'll be fine. But after a while, a few drinks become a lot of drinks every day. Or, you know, I got access to some meds, and they kind of take the edge off to get my nerves settled down because, you know, I'm more effective when I'm settled down. But before long, getting settled down becomes addiction. And that thing that we thought was going to give us so much, that was going to take care of us, just took from us. And it's important to recognize that they do not have to be bad things to have bad outcomes. I know what it's like to work yourself to death, to kind of mess up your family because you're so focused on making money and getting ahead and thinking that that's everything. When you leave everything behind, there are all these things in our lives that are promising to redeem us, to make us whole, to take us to some place. And all they do is take us down. That we all have a redeemer in our lives that pretends to be a redeemer, promising so much, but just takes. The thing that we find is that we are all seeking a redeemer. Sometimes they're redeemers that we manufacture on our own or that we pursue that are unhealthy or seem healthy and turn unhealthy. But there is only one true redeemer. There is only truly one who gives us life. Right? That through Jesus' life, death, and resurrection, he offers us true redemption. Right? The Apostle Paul, writing about 30 years or so after the death of Jesus, writes this. In Jesus, skipped my slide here, sorry. I got so caught up in my own storytelling, I didn't need the Bible. I was rolling along here. Sorry. Anyway, so the Apostle Paul says, in Jesus we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins, in accordance with the riches of God's grace that he lavished on us. Right, that in Jesus we have full redemption. Right, to be freed from our sins, be freed from our mistakes, be freed from the things that have gotten a hold of us. And he did this through his death and resurrection. And why did he do it? Well, Jesus tells us why he did it. One of his closest followers, a guy named John, records Jesus saying this. He says, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. That, you know, so often religion is associated with being this kind of restrictive thing, that kind of that takes from us. And if that's the case, you're kind of doing it wrong. Right? Because Jesus promised that it's a life that is full. That all those things that we grab onto, that we think are going to make our lives better, always let us down eventually. But Jesus says, I've come that you may have life to the full, to give you something that's more, that pursuing something real leads to something real. And what we find is that even though Boaz is just a man, this interaction with Ruth and Boaz is very much like the interaction that Jesus invites us into. Right? In order for Ruth to be redeemed by Boaz, all she had to do was ask. That's what Jesus extends to us, that if we will put our faith in him and ask him to make us whole, to be our redeemer, he will. And the thing I want to encourage us with is that even if you've been a believer your whole life or for many years, you know, you do not need to renew your salvation. In other words, once you believe, you believe. But sometimes I need to be reminded of the support from him I need, the help I need from him. So, you know, I would encourage you to, you know, not in a way of, Jesus, I need you to save me again, but I would encourage you to be, Jesus, remind me of what you've done for me. Remind me of the gift you've given me. Remind me of the freedom that I have in you, that when I am drawn towards something that is taking my freedom, remind me that you have already given it to me. Now, for Ruth and Boaz, they get together, they have children. And what's really interesting is that they have a son who then has another son who then has a son. So her great-grandson is a guy named David, better known as King David, kind of one of the greatest kings in the history of the ancient world. And then David later would have an even more famous descendant. Who is? Jesus. Generations and generations later, the marriage of Ruth and Boaz leads to the birth of Jesus. And what that tells us is that a person, in this case a woman, who was in her life struggling to survive, at times walking through life with no direction, even struggling to care for herself, ends up being part of the line of Jesus. That's the kind of redemption that is extended to all of us. You know, in the 12-step world, we say that the promises are true, that we can live in this dysfunction, and someone keeps saying that if you'll get out of the dysfunction and you'll lean on God, that you will see this transformation in your life. And we say the promises are true, and we see it over and over again, that the promises are true, that's the kind of renewal that's available to all of us. But one last point I want to remind us of. So Ruth ends up having this great life through in her redeemer, which in her case was Boaz. But what's interesting that she already knew Boaz, knew of him anyway, but she did not know that Boaz was her redeemer. How did she find out that Boaz was her redeemer? Naomi told her. She didn't know who her redeemer really was until someone else told her. So what I want to kind of encourage all the folks who've put their faith in Jesus already, if you call yourself a Christian or a Jesus follower, who are you telling about the redeemer? Who in your life? Right? There's certainly someone in your life who doesn't know Jesus. And are you telling them about your redeemer? Because there are lots of people who have heard of Jesus, right? If you live in the United States, everyone's heard of Jesus. But there are lots of people who don't know him. They won't know him unless someone helps them to know him. I want to show you a quick video here that Pam actually sent me this week. It's from Daily Bread. It's from their online site. But I just love this video. It's just 2 minutes long.
I love Romans 1:16 that says, I am not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes. It is the power of God. You know, that Greek word for power is dunamis. It's where we get our English word dynamite. It's the explosive power of God for the salvation of everyone who simply believes. I've seen this explosive power in my own family. You see, I don't come from a typical religious, church-going, pew-sitting, hymn-singing family. I come from a family filled with bodybuilding, tobacco-chewing, beer-drinking thugs. And that's just the women. No, three of my uncles were competitive bodybuilders. The fourth one was a bouncer at the toughest bar in Denver. The fifth one was a Golden Gloves boxer, judo champion, and war hero. The Denver Mafia nicknamed my uncles the Crazy Brothers. So whenever the Mafia thinks your family's dysfunctional, that's not good. And the toughest one of my uncles was my Uncle Jack. In and out of jail his whole life, once for choking two cops unconscious at the same time. But then one day, a preacher from the Deep South, whose nickname for some reason was Yankee, planted a church in the suburbs of Denver, reached out to the city, went to my Uncle Jack's house on a dare from a guy named Bob Daly, knocked on his door on a Saturday morning. My Uncle Jack came to the door, no shirt on, tats everywhere, two beer cans, one for drinking beer, one for spit and chew. He goes, "What do you want?" Yankee said, "I'm here on a dare from Bob Daly to tell you about Jesus." Jack says, "I don't know Jesus, I know Bob. I'll give you 5 minutes." Yankee sat down at his kitchen table, explained the good news of the gospel to my Uncle Jack, that Jesus died on the cross for sinners, that Jesus was buried, rose from the dead, and all those who simply put their faith in him have eternal life. My Uncle Jack had never heard it that simple. Yankee said, "Does that make sense?" My Uncle Jack said, "Hell yeah." That was a sinner's prayer. Hell yeah. When my Uncle Jack trusted Christ, he brought 250 people out to Yankee's church in 1 month. That message began to spread throughout my family. The gospel changed everything. The power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes. That explosive power of God. Who will you share the gospel with today?
If you're someone who's put your faith in Jesus already, Jesus says that it is your responsibility, it is my responsibility to help other people come to know him, right? And come to know him doesn't mean we just kind of shout something at them, right? Come to know God or coming to know Jesus is something that happens in a journey, right? That we're willing to walk through life with people, to invest in people, to be there with one another. But Jesus was really clear, right? It's our responsibility. I looked at this verse last week, right? Jesus says, "Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you." Right? Jesus says that we are to be a people of action. Right? When there are people who are hungry, we feed them. Right? When there are people who are on a path of destruction, we walk with them. That's not a good wording. People are on a path of destruction. We get to know them and we support them and we do the work of helping them to know Jesus. And no matter who you are, no matter how long you've been a Jesus follower, there are people in your life who do not know Jesus. They may have heard of him, but they don't know him. And you may be the one that can show them. You may be the one that they can hear from. And what we may have to realize is that there's a real possibility that there is someone in your life who never comes to know Jesus. They've heard of him, but never comes to know him. Yet, they would have known you for years. Or they may have known me for years. And if we don't tell them about them, and I'm not saying we beat them over the head, right? But we want to be in relationship supporting one another. Right? All of us are in struggles in our lives. All of us should be working together to support one another. And when we know someone in our life who doesn't really know Jesus, we are called by Jesus to step into that life.